Hey, welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what's screening and streaming, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Mia. He's Slim.
Hello.
And together we'll dig through what's dropping this weekend, last weekend, recent trends on Letterboxd, and we'll also take a peek at our own watchlists, all under 30 minutes or your money back.
This episode is so big, Mia. We needed our friends at Mubi to help us bring it to you. Mubi is a curated streaming service showing exceptional films from around the globe, from iconic directors to emerging auteurs. There's always something new to discover, and with Mubi, each and every film is hand-selected, by the way. It's like your own personal film festival, streaming anytime, anywhere, even on your couch.
You know I'm a Mubi sub, and if you remember, we let you know a few weeks back that Decision to Leave was streaming on Mubi, but did you also know The Kingdom Exodus is also streaming now?
Wow, 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 wow.
Yes,
wow,
yes. Wow, wow. I am a sicko for Lars von Trier. I can admit that. So this is the anticipated return of the King's infamous series, The Kingdom. And it's available exclusively on Mubi in the US, UK, and many other countries. And not only that, but newly restored versions of The Kingdom 1 and 2 are also streaming exclusively on Mubi.
I need a new meme where it's like the sicko in front of the window, but it's you peering in and you're wearing a shirt that says sickos.
Yes, I need that. I'm peering in on The Kingdom Exodus Part 2. I need to catch up on the first one.
The Kingdom Exodus returns to the ghost story about a hospital built on top of the old bleaching ponds in Copenhagen, where evil has taken root and medical science faces a daily struggle with itself, where the Swedes curse the Danes and the mysterious and inexplicable blend together in a mixture of horror and humor, which, to be honest, sounds right up my alley.
I have heard people describe this as Lars von Trier's Twin Peaks, if that entices
what?
Anybody. Yeah, I'm just saying, hey, I'm just reporting what I've heard. So check out The Kingdom Exodus now, and you can try Mubi free for 90 days at mubi.com/letterboxed. That's mubi.com/letterboxed for 3 months of great cinema for free.
Okay, so Babylon is finally here. Damien Chazelle, you hit the red carpet recently, which we might get into later, as well as Glass Onion finally hitting Netflix this weekend. Women Talking getting a wider theatrical release. And from there, we'll dig into your community reviews, tag Weekend Watch List, what that same community thought of last week's movie, and something brand new just for this week. We'll talk about our own holiday watch list to wrap up the show.
But first, Slim, come with me to this huge freaking swinging party that is Babylon, okay? You're my plus one.
I'm ready.
I don't know. I don't know.
Am I ready? That's a good question because I haven't seen it. Am I ready for this movie?
I'm not sure. I don't know if anybody is. So Babylon is on a whopping 123,000 watch lists.
Cripes.
It is coming out wide in theaters, of course, and it is a tale of outsized ambition and outrageous excess, tracing the rise and fall of multiple characters during an era of unbridled decadence and depravity in early Hollywood.
My God, depravity in Hollywood. This is the key. This is what people want at the end of the year. Give me the depravity. So this is on an insane amount of watch lists. This is like, I consider this one of those fabled Letterboxd movies. You know, Damien Chazelle, he has the Letterboxd community. He's puppet mastering them with his new release. Were you puppet mastered? You saw this, right?
I did see this. I also did speak to Damien Chazelle on the red carpet.
My God.
I can't lie to
you.
No big deal. He did tell me his four faves. I did get that out of him. So
Can you tease us? Do we have at least one?
Oh, he said Sunrise. Not the Before trilogy, mind you, but the film Sunrise. You heard of this, Slim?
No, I'm looking up Letterboxd right now, Sunrise.
Oh, he's already schooling you.
Get out of here, 1927?
Yeah.
Is that real?
Yes, it's real. So Damien very, very meticulously researched this era. He has seen so many silent films. That love is very apparent in this film, Babylon, which is not so silent.
A Song of Two Humans, an artistic masterpiece and also a joy to watch. It's a 4.2 on Letterboxd right now. Okay.
See, he knows his stuff. He knows his stuff.
There's a lot of Boogie Nights buzz about this movie on Letterboxd.
Yes, yes. Oh, 1,000%. It is very much Boogie Nights meets Wolf of Wall Street meets Singing in the Rain.
And you were quoting Alex's review. A lot of people are going to hate this, but I was gobbling this debauchery up for almost 3 hours. Yum, yum, yum. And Alex did do the call out. Wolf of Wall Street, Singing in the Rain, Boogie Nights. And to be honest, that's an amazing pitch.
Yeah.
For me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, those are three great films. And I did enjoy A good chunk of the movie. I enjoyed about like an hour and a half, but you know, that's about half the runtime. It's 3 hours. My favorite parts about the movie were, I mean, Margot Robbie is a star. We love her very much. She's doing an incredible mm-hmm. performance, but I really, really loved this actress, Lee Jun Lee, who goes by Lili. Mm. She plays a woman inspired by Anime Wong, and she was easily my favorite. I wish the film had focused a little bit more on these periphery characters because they were a lot more interesting than like Brad Pitt speaking fake Italian again and falling over. But if you love film history and you don't mind seeing elephants having explosive diarrhea, which is not a spoiler, it is the very first scene of the movie. It is the very first scene, you should know. Then this is a must watch.
Buongiorno. Oh, that's God. We were talking about White Lotus earlier. I feel like I'd fit right in. On a nice little retreat.
Send Slim to the White Lotus.
Please. Glass Onion. We're back again with Glass Onion. We can't escape Glass Onion. It's on 207,000 watch list. Rian Johnson. It's finally hitting Netflix this weekend. So just like you, our dear listener, I'm finally able to watch Glass Onion in the comfortable state of my couch. Detective Benoit Blanc travels to Greece to peel back the layers of a mystery involving a new cast of suspects. So you've seen this. This is old hat for you. You saw this in theaters.
Been there, done that. I already talked about this on the pod, as our faithful listeners, I'm sure, remember. So I guess I have to do it again. I guess I have to admit once more that I liked Glass Onion more than Knives Out. Great. God. Are you happy?
I don't know. We'll see what kind of at mentions you get on Twitter after making such a claim. We'll just see.
And to be clear, I'm not saying it's better. I'm just saying there were some things in here that were very, very fine-tuned to my personal interests.
Brenna left a review. I won't even try to buttress my emotions. I love this. Make 15 more of these Knives Out mysteries and I'll see every single one of them with jubilation. Love that word, jubilation.
Jubilation and buttress.
Yeah. Brenna, stop flexing on us so hard. I can't handle these big words. I have to YouTube all these words I don't know how to pronounce. I look like an idiot prepping for this show.
YouTube all these words. Okay. Let's kind of move to more somber territory, shall we?
Okay, shall we?
Let's become women talking. Women Talking, directed by Sarah Polley. This is on 48,000 watch lists, and it is coming out in limited theaters this weekend. So please show it your support. It really deserves it. This is, it's based on a true story that happened literally about a decade ago. So it's very recent, even though it doesn't feel like it is. So it is about a group of women in an isolated religious colony who struggle to reconcile their faith with a string of sexual assaults committed by the colony's men. And it's adapted from a novel by Miriam Toews, which I highly, highly, highly recommend. It is a very quick read, but it's also devastating and ultimately hopeful. And I feel that Sarah Polley did a remarkable job adapting it for the screen.
Yeah, I'm excited this is getting into more theaters. I think we briefly talked about this maybe a month or two ago when it first premiered. Jess left a review, a particularly stunning piece of filmmaking. Sarah Polley utilizes some very specific choices in her directing and editing that shape a work you can't tear yourself away from, as much as the subject matter may make you want to. To make the story resemble a fable is perhaps the best way to universalize it, and it's incredibly effective in that way, and yet we still feel so present and so close to the specifics of these characters and their lives.
Yes, there are so many like little specific details peppered throughout this film that show just it was made with so much love and empathy and hope. And I know it sounds like a very, very heavy film, which it mm-hmm. is, but it really is ultimately hopeful. I know I keep saying that, but it's the truth. Like you walk away with hope. Isn't that nice?
Is there anything more hopeful than Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, directed by Joel Crawford on 15,000 watch lists? Well, this is a lightning round, so we'll just go through this real quick. The Puss in Boots, this is in theaters, discovers that his passion for adventure has taken its toll. He has burned through 8 of his 9 lives, leaving him with only 1 life left. Plus sets out on an epic journey to find the mythical last wish and restore his 9 lives. And there is something happening with this movie. It's at a 4.0 average on Letterboxd. And Gemma, I think, gave it 4.5 stars.
Gemma has a crush on Puss. So
yes, big time crush. Yes. But something is brewing with this movie. We just need to let folks know that this could be one to check out for sure.
Yes, I do hear it's a secret masterpiece. And Florence Pugh is in it.
She's everywhere.
She's everywhere.
She's in like 4 movies a year. I don't know how she does it.
Yeah.
For God's sake. She got that new Zach Braff trailer that dropped this past week. Zach Braff.
Zach
They're no longer
Braff.
Together, but they'll be together on the press tour, I guess.
Ooh, I cannot wait for that press tour.
Woohoo. The last thing we'll spotlight in the lightning round, this is actually coming out next week, White Noise. Noah Baumbach, 61,000 watch list. This is also very buzzy on Letterboxd. Jack Gladney, professor of Hitler studies at the College on the Hill, husband to Babette and father to 4 children and stepchildren, is torn asunder by a chemical spill from a rail car that releases an, quote, airborne toxic event, forcing Jack to confront his biggest fear, his own mortality. Have you seen White Noise yet?
It is that and Avatar Way of Water are like the 2 last movies of this year that I have not seen yet.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I'm working on it. I'm working on it. I sure would like to see it. I love Noah Baumbach. I'll admit it. I love mm-hmm. him. I love Greta Gerwig, especially when they're working together.
Right.
So I will be there. I will be there for the airborne toxic event.
We mentioned that it's dropping next weekend because next week we're not doing a regular show. We're going to be doing a special 2023 preview episode with all 3 weekend watchlist hosts. It's never been done before.
Wow.
Never.
This is history.
This is the biggest moment in the history of this show. So before we talk any further, let's look back at last week. Let's see what the community thought of the movies that dropped last week, like Avatar, Bardo, and maybe anything we want to call out. So Avatar is trending at a 3.9 average on Letterboxd. Kev left a review. Perhaps the greatest joy of this tremendous spectacle is the way the film spends about a third of its runtime, promising you that you'll never have to wait 13 years or more for Avatar again. There's like 9 more coming, Mia.
Wow, 3.9 average. So it's below Puss in Boots, The Last Wish.
All right, enough. Enough of this. This is just too mean to our sweet boy, Jim Cameron. He doesn't deserve this.
Outsold by Puss in Boots.
Yes. I also just want to say there's so many Avatar reviews that were tagged weekend watch list. We can't highlight all of them, but I was going through pages and pages of Avatar. So there was a lot of members of the Letterboxd community going to see Avatar 2 in theaters this past week.
Also, Nanny, with a 3.3 average, we have this review from Jason Still. The bow that ties the cinematic gift together is a beautifully authentic performance from the awesome Anna Diop, such that you don't realize just how much you've invested in her plight until the final haunting moments. This one will stay with me for some time.
That's on Prime. It's still on my watch list. It's also on my second watch list that I try to organize because the first one is just too out of hand. The Inspection also is hitting video on demand this week. It's 3.5 average from Elegance Bratton. Flynn left a review when she first saw it. Closing night at NYFF, and what a film. Absolutely devastating and beautiful. So that's hitting VOD.
Ooh.
Last call out, Bardo. I have some friends that do a podcast called Real Latinos, R-E-E-L, and they're covering Bardo this upcoming week. So if you're looking to expand your audio horizons, be sure to check them out. Should we get into our holiday watch list, you think?
We should, but can I just say that I saw Jean Dielman.
What?
Yeah.
The Sight and Sound number one movie of all time?
Yes, I saw it. I saw it in a theater, in a movie theater in New York City.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How was that experience? That's like seeing Avatar Way of the Water, but with 3D glasses.
Honestly, Jean Dielman is my avatar. Like, it is the same runtime. but I am so, so happy I saw it in a theater because it really like demands your, you've seen it, Slim.
Yeah, I have seen it. It does demand your attention.
Yes.
Absolutely.
If I had watched this at home, I would be pausing to scroll on my phone every 5 minutes. Not good. So I'm very, very happy I saw it in theaters because it forced me to watch. And I am so happy I did because now I know Jean's routine intimately. I know everything she does every day. And I will notice if she drops a fork and it will make the whole audience scream.
Yeah, I remember when that list came out, I think Gemma wrote an article. We had an article on Journal that spotlighted how so many people added it to their watch list on Letterboxd. You have to imagine so many other people had never even heard of the movie. If I wasn't doing the Letterboxd show, I probably also would not have seen it. And it does command your attention. It's like 3.5 hours in another language. You can't be on Twitter. You can't be on IG Explorer.
No.
You got to focus.
No, you got to watch this woman eat her soup.
Okay, so new segment just for this episode only this year, our holiday watch lists. We asked folks to tag their lists. What do they watch every year on the holidays? So we'll spotlight some in a few minutes. So we put down five or so movies on our holiday watch list. Mia, what's the first thing on your watch list for the holidays that you fire up every year?
It has to be Bridget Jones's Diary. It just does. I have spoken about this before, but I am a strong believer in abolishing the Love Actually industrial complex. We have to take that out of the holiday rotation, you guys. We have to replace it with Bridget Jones. It's just the better Hugh Grant, Colin Firth movie. They're fighting in the streets. Slim, how do you feel about Colin Firth as Mark Darcy?
He's an absolute dud, Colin Firth's character in this movie. He's an absolute dud. We talked about this on the Four Faves episode this week with five of us, and that was the first time I'd watched Bridget Jones' Diary. I had a great time, but I just couldn't connect with Colin. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm the odd man out. Everyone thinks he's just a hunk in this movie.
He's very boring. I'll give you that. He's boring, but he's dependable, and he likes her just the way she is. And he doesn't treat her like Daniel Cleaver does her.
Right. There's a review that I moved later in the show that was tagged Weekend Watchlist. Rob also watched Bridget Jones. Colin Firth, I am free most days. Please call me. I'd like to talk.
Other people appreciate him and see his personality through his stoic demeanor. Look at that.
one that I watch every year is Christmas Vacation. I love Christmas Vacation. I love this era of Chevy Chase. I just rewatched it with my lovely wife, Amanda. I gave 5 stars. And there's a 4K of it that recently came out as well. I haven't grabbed that just yet, but I did watch it digitally. There's just something about Chevy Chase in this era as I get older. Like, I connect with way more. You know, as you become a family person, maybe you have kids, you have relatives over. Just the stuff that he does just cracks me up. It's so real. There's also one moment in the movie that I love is when he fails to light up the house in front of, like, his in-laws, his parents, and everyone's just, like, kind of, like, disgusted with him. And his daughter sticks up for him. You know, hey, you know, Dad worked really hard on this. And that is, like, one of the most beautiful moments. My God, if my son is ever in that position and he stands up for me, I'll probably just turn into soup. You know, I'll probably start crying, like, right in front of there. What a great job Chevy did raising that kid. You know, love it.
My truth is I haven't seen it yet.
It's okay. It's okay. There's a lot more holidays on our horizon.
Plenty of Christmases left to watch.
Yes. What's next on your watch list?
So I actually just rewatched The Holiday.
Oh.
Yep. Yeah. Oh. I love my holiday rom-coms. This one's silly. The Holiday is silly and it's fun. Have you seen it?
Is this the one with Jack Black in it?
Yes.
Oh my God. Jack.
Yes.
I have not seen this. I've only seen the poster. Kate Winslet in this. Oh my God.
Oh man. Yes. Yes. It's Kate Winslet and Cameron Diaz swap houses, LA and England. And they each meet a different man. So Jude Law is in England. Jack Black is in America. And, you know, when the movie first came out, people were like, oh, Kate Winslet gets Jack Black and Cameron Diaz gets Jude Law. Like, Cameron really won. But when you actually watch the movie, Jack Black is the better man.
Oh.
He is so sweet and cute and charming and goofy. And he does scrootaloodaloo. So, The Holiday.
He looks so young in this poster. This is not even that long ago. It's 2006. But man, he looks like a young man with many more holidays ahead of him as well.
Yes. What else? What else is on yours?
I always watch Planes, Trains, and Automobiles during the holiday season. That's maybe one of my favorites. Steve Martin, John Candy, you know, they're just trying to get back home for the holidays and hijinks ensues. You know, their personalities are so different and they have to, you know, stay in the hotels together, travel across country. I always point out that if I was ever in this situation and I didn't have my cell phone, like if I was taking a plane ride home, my phone went missing and the flight was canceled and I had to find an alternate means of getting home, I would be dead in 12 hours. There's no way I could survive in any way, shape, or form without a phone in that spot, right?
No, absolutely not.
Back in the day, I had to print out MapQuest directions in my car. That's how I used to get around, Mia. Can you imagine doing that today?
No.
It sounds like I'm from the Stone Age when I just said that out loud.
I had to do that recently when my phone cell service stopped working. I had to be on the phone with my dad as he gave me directions to get somewhere. Even that is a phone. Like,
that's
there's
true.
No way.
That's true.
Oh, man.
We would be dead. We would both be in a ditch What else? What's another holiday movie for you?
Ooh, Greta Gerwig's Little Women, 2019. Oh. I rewatched that in a theater last year, and I weep every time. You might think, this time I'm going to be strong. I know what happens. I'm going to make it through. Nope.
I love that movie. I love that's a perfect movie. I love the scene where they're just dancing outside the house together.
Thank you.
What a beautiful scene. Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Give me another holiday fave, Slim.
Another holiday fave. I'll tell you what, we have some friends that tag their lists on Letterboxd, weekend watch list. So I'll look at Steven's list. Steven has It's a Wonderful Life on there. That was probably another one on my list.
I mean, I think that is like the greatest Christmas film of all time, probably.
Yes. Confirmed.
Right? Yeah.
If you don't cry while watching It's a Wonderful Life, I don't know what to tell you, but you need to get checked out.
I want to live again. That's what he says.
Ah, it's in Bill's house. I sound like a bird.
He sounds like a bird, so.
Holiday Inn is also on Stephen's list, and The Bishop's Wife. Have you seen either of those?
Okay, I need to see The Bishop's Wife because it stars my man, Cary Grant. That's one that I've been wanting to watch, but I'm always like, oh, it's not Christmas. I don't want to watch it. But now I can. Yay.
I also pulled up Nick's list, and funnily enough, Avatar and Barbarian are on Christmas watch list 2022 for Nick. So very different interpretations of holiday films, but Jingle All the Way is on Nick's list. Have you seen Jingle All the Way with Arnold?
No, you know, my truth is I actually have quite a big Christmas movie blind spot.
We have some work to do.
I do. I have a lot to cram in the next couple days.
Darth Gnome put a list together. Gremlins is on there. So have you seen Gremlins?
Yes. Okay. I have seen Gremlins. Phew. I have seen the Gremlins.
On Darth Gnome's holiday list, Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas, which you got the last time you were on the show as your watch list shuffle.
It's true.
So how did that go? You watched that in preparation for this show.
I did. I watched Emmett Otter and his wonderful jug band. So this little special, it's like a 53-minute special by the Jim Henson Company. And so they're little Muppet guys. Kermit the Frog makes a special appearance. He introduces Emmett. It's amazing. But other than that, I don't know the lore of these otters, but it made me curious. I need to know more about them. The otter lore. They're my new favorite band. This was actually a very sad special. Have you seen this, Slim?
No, I have not seen this. I know I talked about adding it to my watch list, but I did not.
You should definitely add to the watch list, but just be warned, everybody. This is sad. It's about these otters, and they're living in poverty. They have nothing.
Poverty.
And all they want to do, in order to get money, they have to win this contest where they play in this band, and it's the only way for them to get money. But a lot of the movie is them just kind of being poor and destitute and singing about how they don't have anything and they look so cold. Be prepared for that.
Keep that in mind. Yeah, it's on Peacock Premium. It's on Prime streaming. So if you have either of those services, you can fire this up this weekend with the fam and listen to some jug band music. You know Kermit could probably help out these otters. You know he's rolling in it.
I was kind of thinking that. I was like, Kermit, you know, you can. I know you have that movie money. I know you're a Hollywood star. We saw the
Muppets
movie.
Got driven off in a limo after he said goodbye to his otter friends. Kermit. My shuffle was Dreamscape with Dennis Quaid. That had been on my watch list for a while. Wasn't bad. Max von Sydow has a mustache in it. It just blew my mind. He was young. He had a mustache. It freaked me out. Really great cast. Kate Capshaw, Mike Clean from the second Indiana Jones movie. I do wish there was more sci-fi in it. It seemed very drama and intrigue. Like they work with psychics to enter the dreams of people who are sleeping, which kind of sounds pretty cool. Like I know Inception did some dream stuff, but like when you mix in like psychics, I thought to myself, like, actually, is this possible? Could we do this? But I'd love to see a remake of this nowadays and maybe with some more, you know, budget sci-fi stuff to like enter the dreams of these people. Pretty cool stuff. Pretty cool. I liked it.
I have seen this movie. I want to see.
What?
Yeah. So I thirst watched it for Dennis Quaid a couple of years ago. I have to be honest.
Yeah, he's like a young hunk in this.
He's a young hunk. The poster is very much recalling Indiana Jones.
Yeah, you're like in your head, like, look at this poster. Am I adventuring into people's dreams for 2 hours? It's not quite that. It's still very real worldy with some, you know, jumping into people's dreams. And like, the only thing that really shows that someone's dream is like the red tint in the camera. It's like, oh, I'm in someone's dream. Ah, that's about it. There went the budget for the red tint. So let's see, before we shuffle again, we'll spotlight one or two reviews from our community. Brandon watched The Driver. I think Brandon just got a 4K release. The opening chase had my blood pumping. Ryan O'Neal and Isabel Adjani in 1978 4K. I've already said too much. Bruce Dern's hair is angelic. That 4K release looked pretty good.
Diddy Rose saw Violent Night. Each stabbing, slaying, and knockout dragout satisfied every angry bone in my body, and David Harbour's smoldering intensity satisfied so much more.
Oh my
word. I'm telling you, the sexification of Santa.
It's time. We've said it before. It's time to sexify him. Please. So we mentioned before, so next week is our 2023 preview episode, all three hosts. So we will still shuffle, but it's going to be a little bit before we actually talk about these movies. We're taking January off. We're taking the month off. And as folks know in this feed, Mia, you're moving on up. You're hosting a new show on Letterboxd, Best in Show. So you'll be doing some of that during January. So let's head to our watch lists. And we'll shuffle, and then this will be the first movie we talk about once we're back in the game for weekend watch list in February, after next week. I'm going to filter stream only. I'm going to sort by shuffle. Oh my God. It's time. George Romero's The Dark Half. Ooh. From 1993 on Pluto and Tubi. Timothy Hutton. There are very good reasons to be afraid of the dark. Great poster. Thad Beaumont is the author of a highly successful series of violent pulp thrillers. But when he decides to kill off his alter ego in a mock ceremony, it precipitates a string of sadistic murders matching his novels. George Romero, ooh. Timothy Hutton. What could go wrong? 3.0 average.
Ooh, you know, Slim, I just shuffled. I also got a violent thriller. Miss 45.
Oh my God.
Gun. It's directed by Abel Ferreira. It's been on my watch list for so, so long. You know I love it when women get revenge. I just think it's neat.
What a pick. Abel Ferreira. Mm-hmm. There's nobody like him.
No, this will be my first Abel Ferreira. Ferrara? I know. Listen, I know.
Oh my God. This is going to be a big February for us.
Yeah.
This is when we're here. We're here about this movie. And then next week, our final episode until February 2023. Thanks so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. You can follow me at Slim, that's me, and our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes. And don't forget, next week is our giant 2023 preview episode with all three Weekend Watchlist hosts. So we need you to buckle up and get ready.
Thanks to our crew, and thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On. Thanks to Jack for the facts and Sophie Shin for the episode transcript. And to you for listening. Weekend Watchlist is a Tape Deck production. This is a Tape Deck podcast.